I'm Michael, and welcome to Beyond the Screenplay, the podcast where each week we do a conversational deep dive analysis into a film. Today, we are kicking off our third What We're Watching series, which is our patron-exclusive podcast where we watch a limited series week by week. We're talking about the first two episodes of The Book of Boba Fett on Disney+. I'm joined by the Beyond the Screenplay team, Trisha Arand.
Hello, everybody.
Brian Bittner.
Hello, hello.
And Alex Calleros.
Hi.
Okay, so Happy New Year, everyone. We're here, and so we're going to talk about Book of Boba Fett. So, Trisha, you were really excited about Mandalorian. We talked about that a little bit back in our Star Wars, you know, what are the new episodes, new films thing. But so, since then, there's been Mandalorian Season 2, and now we have Boba Fett, which is kind of like a, almost like a Season 3-ish. It feels like it's a little bit of a continuation. So let's start with you. How are you feeling about these first two entries into the series?
Ooh, lots of mixed feelings. Like, I did come in really excited, and I think I still feel optimistic and like I'm enjoying watching it for the most part, but it's not what I expected. And I have a lot of like, why did we do it quite like this? I'm not sure about where it's going. Like that kind of I don't know. It's just, you know, the thing about The Mandalorian is that it's borrowing like genre conventions and language and like genre. I don't want to say the word tropes because that has like a negative connotation to it, but it certainly is blending genres and influences in a way that I think is really interesting. And one of the things that, you know, in that episode about the new Star Wars things that I pointed out that I really loved about The Mandalorian is that it, especially in its first season, was really leaning into this like episodic structure of like, here's like a, you know, mission of the week, and we're gonna like go to this planet and help these people, and like it's kind of be just like a little chapter, and like in sort of an old school TV kind of way that I really enjoyed. And so I guess I was expecting something more like that from The Book of Boba Fett, and so far it seems like that is not what's happening. There are lots of interesting structural choices. You know, there's basically two stories happening in two different time periods in Boba Fett's life. And we're intercutting, but in like a really long form way where it seems like, you know, we'll be in one time period for 20 minutes and then like cut back slightly and then go back to the other time period. And so it just, it absolutely structurally is nothing like The Mandalorian. And it's also not speaking the same genre cinematic language that The Mandalorian is speaking. You know, Mandalorian is borrowing from like Westerns and samurai things. And like, it's really, like I said, doing, you know, there was an episode of The Mandalorian that was like a heist mission-y thing. And then there were, you know, other bottle like contained kind of episodes. There was, you know, that really Western, like heavy, heavy Western episode with Timothy Oliphant and stuff. And so it's just like, I was kind of expecting that from Boba Fett. It's simply not interested in doing any of that. And I don't know if all that it is doing is working for me, but I am very curious as to what's going to happen next.
Yeah. I mean, it does feel to me like it still kind of has like one foot in the Western thing.
Yeah.
Sure.
Especially, I guess, like the second episode had a little bit of that.
Yeah.
With the train robbery.
Yeah.
And some other elements there. I think that makes a lot of sense. And I'm feeling that as well. Brian, what about you? How are you feeling?
Also mixed, but ultimately positive. I've mentioned multiple times that Return of the Jedi was my Star Wars growing up. So just having a live action Star Wars show set in this world, in this area, on this part of this planet, it's great for me. Like the teaser for Book of Boba Fett that happened at the end of season two of Mandalorian, where they come in and they take out Bib Fortuna and they sit on the throne. I was like, yes, I just want, like, I'm so excited for this to exist. Because they've been talking about live-action Star Wars since before, TV shows since before Lucasfilm was sold. And I've said this multiple times. I'm just like, Star Wars, just let people go make things. Like, I just watched Star Wars Visions, the anime show, that's like 9 different short films by different Japanese animators. And like, some of them were awesome and some of my favorite Star Wars things ever. And some of them were absolutely not for me. And like, I appreciate that there's something for everyone. But these shows, The Mandalorian and this, sort of feel like they are targeted a little bit more towards the original trilogy audience, with some Clone Wars characters kind of baked into it. Mm-hmm. So I think ultimately, like, if the worst case scenario is I'm like entertained for 30 minutes by like live action Star Wars, I'm pretty happy. This felt like more of the same for Mandalorian in different ways, obviously, but yeah, it still has the Western feel. It still has the samurai feel a little bit. They refer to him as the daimyo, you know, and there's right, like the yeah, rituals yeah. But yeah, I also have, there are some things that I'm like, no, I don't really want that in my Star Wars, and that didn't quite work for me. But we can get into all that, but simply put, I enjoy that these shows exist and I have fun watching them, and they make my little kid Star Wars, you know, heart, beat a little faster,
grew by three times sizes that yeah. night. Yeah.
Let's start over. Michael, do the intro.
Hi, welcome to cool. Yeah, yeah. Okay, great. And so, Alex, so you had watched a couple episodes of The Mandalorian.
Yeah,
and I think that's I got all,
like
right?
three, four episodes in. Maybe.
Yeah. So yeah, you have a different context for Boba Fett going into it. Yes. So what do you make of this so far?
Yeah, it's interesting, Brian. You mentioned, you know, your heart still is a flutter for just seeing the set, you know, from Return of the Jedi, or these like symbols, images, and I once felt that too. You know, there were different moments in time when the prequels were going to come out. You know, 1989. Episode one, any image of Star Warsiness was the most exciting image of all time. You know, and then again with the J.J. Abrams, you know, reboot Force Awakens, that was equally this moment of possibility and excitement, and seeing just a shot of BB-8 rolling on the dirt was the most amazing thing ever. Hmm. And so I identify with that feeling, and I have felt it. And I think Disney, as Disney seems to do to me, has just wrung it out of me. And so now I almost am resentful when I am being shown images that are meant to elicit that, because I don't know that you can do this over and over and over and over again and expect me to feel the same way that I felt in 1999 or with the Force Awakens teaser trailer. I think stories need to have more than that. And to be fair, this show does have more than that. And I think episode two went to some interesting places that got me actually interested and excited to see where the show goes next. But episode one was a rough viewing for me, because that episode for me did not give me more than what I felt were just kind of like the Disney platter of like nostalgia symbols. I didn't feel like I was getting a compelling story with compelling characters. I was getting a series of scenes that are meant to look like cool Boba Fett things and cool Tatooine things that don't necessarily add up to much. So yeah, I was very kind of almost resentful of the first episode, because it did feel like it was just banking entirely on my heart being a flutter for Star Wars. But episode two really actually surpassed my expectations, because getting into like the culture of the Sand People and humanizing them and making them actual characters and not just like weird scary monster things, and like a pretty well executed train heist sequence, like that was actually a fun sequence to watch. I did not have fun watching the fight sequences in the first episode, but I actually was engaged during that whole train sequence. So that kind of I was ready to be, you know, the Marvel Scrooge, the Disney Scrooge over here, and then they went into like, you know, he had like a shamanic acid trip with the Sand People, like that
thing curled
that
up was, his nose.
That wasn't expected, you know. So
it's a very Alex sequence.
Yeah, I started to respect the show more, because it's like, well, at least this is you're expanding the Star Wars universe here. You're introducing kind of new things into the culture and the world, and not just doing a retread of just images and generic types of scenes that make me think of the original trilogy. So that's my big mess of thoughts right now. Lots of strong feelings, but I am intrigued enough to want to know where it goes next, because I think it's an interesting choice to have the character of Boba Fett, you know, this faceless, almost voiceless character. The direction they're taking him is essentially this, like, Dances with Wolves, like, being accepted into, like, this tribe story, which is not at all what I would have expected from this show, but it's an interesting story that I didn't expect. So
yeah,
we'll see where it goes.
Yeah.
Well, and so, yeah, I feel like there's so many things to talk about, and that's something that we will continue to talk about as we do each of these episodes. I didn't explain at the beginning, but yes, so moving forward, so this episode is public to everyone, and then each week we're going to do a patron exclusive episode where we talk about the events of that episode and how our feelings are evolving as the show's continuing. And I think one of the things that will probably come up a lot is the phrase that you use, Brian, of like, what do you want from your Star Wars? Mm-hmm. And so I feel like that's maybe going to be like the kind of backbone through line that's going to be in my head anyway, while also talking about the actual beat by beat stuff that's happening in these episodes. And it's interesting for me because I was also ready to be kind of humbug and went into the first episode being like, all right, fine, Boba Fett. I've never been a Boba Fett fan, period. I know there were some people that are obsessed with Boba Fett. I was never impressed by him. But I will say, showing how he got out of the Sarlacc pit did make my heart flutter a little bit, like, despite myself. Like, I saw it coming and I was like, get ready, we're gonna be cynical about this. And then I was like, oh, but it's cool, he's getting out of the Stormtrooper. So, like, it did kind of suck me in and, like, get me a little bit into that zone. And then it was interesting, like you were mentioning, Trisha, there is this structural thing that's happening that's an interesting choice, and I think it could be cool. We're going to be talking about The Godfather soon, and so The Godfather's been on my mind, and it was reminding me a little bit of like Godfather Part Two, which I guess, like, we won't talk about too much more because spoilers for Godfather Part Two, people won't know somehow. But it's just, it's really interesting doing the story of like Boba Fett. There's a present day story and a kind of flashback story that's explaining how he got to where we saw him in Mandalorian season two. And Alex, I do feel like if you can get through to season two, there are a lot of really fun set pieces. Like the train heist in episode two was like, oh yeah, this feels like on par for like Mandalorian season two. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like it does evolve.
Because there was kind of the same sequence.
There was a train heist.
But yeah, so I'm curious, yeah, to hear from you guys, and Trish, you sort of started this, of like the structure, and what are we more looking forward to, if anything? Do we want to know moving forward what's going to happen, or are we interested in kind of what has happened to Boba Fett over the years and in his recent past?
Well, I think one thing that I've been thinking a lot about, especially in the first episode, because I was bumping all over the place on the structure of the first episode, or I just felt like I didn't know where I was. Like, I couldn't really find my footing. And the first episode in the present day storyline really feels like it lacks a strong trajectory. Like, I don't know what the dramatic question is. Mm-hmm. And Boba Fett doesn't seem to have a clear goal in the present day storyline. So it's like Boba Fett wants to take over Jabba's empire. But that doesn't look like anything to me. Like, I don't really know what that means. There's not really a ticking clock on it either, right? It's not like you have to do this by this date because you have a presentation to the ruler of Tatooine. I don't know who the ruler of Tatooine is, but like, you know, something like that. That's like, you have to assume control and like quell all uprisings by this point, or you have failed and Jabba's empire will fall to somebody else. Like, I just wish there was some kind of backbone to that present day story. Whereas I feel like the dramatic question in the past is also potentially like, is fairly compelling, although I think that the pacing of it is really interesting in that first episode, especially. It gets really compelling in the second episode, but in the first episode, it's like, will Boba Fett escape from the Sand People? Mm-hmm. But I don't know where he's trying to go, like, or what he's trying to do. Like,
and we know the answer is yes.
We know the answer is yes.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's also part of it. So yeah, there's a really interesting, to me, pretty bumpy, like, trajectory issue, especially in the first episode. And so, like, when assassins show up at the, you know, essentially the climax of the modern, the present day storyline to kill him and Fennec, I don't know who they are. I don't know who they're working for. I don't know why they would want to kill Boba Fett. What's he messing up? What plan is he thwarting that is putting him into the line of fire of these assassins? Because so far, I don't know what I don't know what Boba Fett's plan is. So I don't know how his plan is in conflict with anybody else's. There's just like a basic plot trajectory, logistical, like, what is the show about in that present day storyline that I don't have a clear understanding of. Now, as the episode, and I thought for sure when they captured that assassin alive, I thought for sure that the end of that episode was going to be the interrogation of that assassin, and he was going to reveal who sent him, and it was going to be like, oh my God, it's whoever, like somebody that we've heard of maybe, mm-hmm. or somebody that, you know, really is like, oh, I'm here to kill you because this person is going to get, I don't know, some magical object. And you're like, oh, they're after the magical object. It was going to introduce the trajectory of that present day storyline. I was so sure that's how it was going to end. It doesn't end that way. And so, like, they leave, the first episode really left that hanging. And it comes together a little more in the second episode where it's like, okay, I'm starting to get the sense of the players on the scene. I cannot even tell you the size of the grin on my face when the Hutts got carried in. Like, I was so happy. And there was like an evil Wookiee there. Okay, we'll get to that. That was awesome.
Evil Wookiee.
Oh, so good. I was like, this is what I want Wookiee for my Star Wars shows. But none of that is until the second episode. And the first episode, the work of the first episode is to invest me enough in the show to keep me watching it. And so in terms of, like, dramatic through line, I don't know if the first episode really does it.
Yeah. I mean, I might argue that the assassins weren't trying to kill him, because rather than try to kill him, they jump down and, like, create a circle of pretty shields. Yeah. So maybe that wasn't even the plan.
Right.
Maybe that's the problem that you're running.
We're going to aggressively protect ourselves from you.
Yeah. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Yeah, a couple things come to mind. One of which is, we should spend a tiny bit of time just talking about Boba Fett as this franchise character. You know, there's a 22-minute special on Disney Plus called, I'm not going to remember, Under the Helmet or something like that. Just search for Boba Fett and it'll be like the second thing. And it's super interesting to talk, where first of all, they introduced this character in like 1978 in just a video where they were like showing off his costume, which was all white at the time. And then they were making the holiday special and George Lucas had very little to do with it, but he was like, why don't you put Boba Fett in an animated thing? So that's Boba Fett's first like mm-hmm. intro into Star Wars is in the holiday special. And then they like did a parade with him. So he was this like celebrity character before he showed up in Empire Strikes Back to have, you know, two lines in that movie and two lines in Return of the Jedi. So it's really interesting to see how he has become this fan favorite character just by being interesting and mysterious and looking cool and having cool gadgets.
Basically just looking cool, like, right. To be clear. That's right. His whole thing.
But the funny thing is, in 22 minutes, you have people like Ben Burtt and some of the older people who worked on the original Star Wars saying, he was popular because he was mysterious and George wasn't interested in giving him a backstory and all this kind of stuff. Then cut to George Lucas talking about giving him a backstory in the prequels.
Two. Yeah. Right?
Yep.
And he's like, he goes, Boba Fett was great and I needed another one. So I made Jango Fett. Like, it just sounds like, like, I don't know, his father. And then cut to, we're so excited to bring you this series all about Boba Fett and his history and everything. And look, that's not bad. I mean, they are taking a character and giving us more story. It's a fan favorite character. But the show does lean a lot into you. We assume you already love this character, right? So when you have the, like, he's putting on his armor, and he's putting on the left gauntlet, and that kind of stuff. It's like, well, that doesn't mean anything for the star of this show yet. Even if you've watched season two of Mandalorian, at least you have a little bit of this sort of incarnation of Boba Fett. But yeah, I think that's the thing I'm struggling with, is in present day, he seems like a little proud of himself in the first episode. He's like, I took over from Bib Fortuna and you guys are going to be okay. And I just wanted to let you know that, like, hey, I've got my swagger. And I can't tell if that's supposed to be a dramatic flaw or if they're just like, Boba Fett, everyone loves Boba Fett, so let's just make him be confident and cool. Whereas in the flashback sequences, it is a lot easier to say, like, well, here's a person with nothing who, you know, like Iron Man in the first act of the first Iron Man movie, right? Like, we establish that he is this, like, kind of proud person, but then now he has everything stripped away and he has to kind of, you know, make everything from scratch. So even if basically his character's not super well defined yet, I think, and I think that'll be something that's interesting to follow over the next few episodes.
Definitely.
Yeah.
It's almost like, it's strange to me, the Boba Fett phenomenon, because I think what made him so cool was the mystery and the absence of dialogue or face. And this is a show that is, you know, most of it actually has him without the helmet on, unlike Mandalorian. And it's all about this actor that I don't think of when I think of Boba Fett. Like, I mean, I guess I'm supposed to be thinking of his face ever since episode two, but that's not, like, if you're trying to bank on my childhood, like, love for, like, the action figure Boba Fett, it has nothing to do with this man. So I think it's just interesting that we're making a show based on this obsession that people had with this, like, action figure, essentially. And the show really is about this, like, dude, this kind of older dude, like, in the desert, which I'm down with. Like I said, I think the thing that I find most interesting about the show is the living with the sand people story. But, you know, the other thing that I agree with you, Trisha, about that first episode was it just felt so dull. Like, when they were walking around town, kind of just, like, hitting up spots, you know, if the only dramatic question is, you know, this dude with the tube head, with, like, kind of a weirdly, like, American, like, cocky voice,
like a Twi'lek guy.
Like, I'm not used to those people. Maybe in Mandalorian they do this, but, like, I'm not used to Twi'leks just talking like the guy next door. So that was really disorienting.
Your annoying neighbor.
But in the first episode, it was kind of like the inciting incident was, the mayor is not gonna, like, give you a gift, and so we're gonna go around and kind of, like, make sure everybody's giving us gifts. It's like that also isn't what I want to watch Boba Fett do. Like, you know, if I'm just trying to figure out what Disney is banking on here, because I'm fine with a totally original story about a dude living with the sand people. That's interesting to me. And I'm in for, like, a cool Boba Fett story, but so far it hasn't really been a cool Boba Fett story. It's been kind of this, like, slow, just meandering story about a guy who's not getting a whole lot of respect yet, from the townspeople. So it's just been a very strange, I've been trying to just figure out, like, what is the Boba Fett thing and how is this show really taking advantage of it or not?
Well, it's interesting because I think you're hitting on something that so far it seems like they are doing work towards it, but, you know, it hasn't quite, you know, materialized in these first couple of episodes. And I'll be curious to see how it continues to take shape. But because Boba Fett, as you point out, Brian, is kind of a blank slate of a character, right? That's the thing about a bounty hunter, is that they could come from anywhere and they could kind of be anybody. Like, you could imagine that somebody in a variety of desperate situations with a certain set of skills might be drawn toward bounty hunting in, you know, especially the original trilogy universe, where it's like there's the Empire, there's like these rebels, there's like lots of money to be made potentially if you are kind of a free agent that doesn't have a lot of like a strong ideological position. And so a wide variety of people could be bounty hunters. And I think that was one of the interesting things about bounty hunters as characters in the original trilogy, is that they looked like anybody, right? Like they looked like all of these different people from different walks of life ended up bounty hunting. And so you have basically a blank slate of a character, right? Boba Fett could be anybody. And I think that the work of the show, and like Mandalorian didn't meaningfully dive too deeply into like who Boba Fett is and what he wants. They did a bit, but mostly what Boba Fett wanted in The Mandalorian was just his armor back, which, right, again, is nice and clear. That's a nice, clear goal for a character that's especially like a side character in somebody else's show. Like, he wants his armor back. All right. That's meaningful to him for whatever reason. Great. That can drive a plot. It's a clear enough goal. It can drive a plot. But in this show, who is he? What does he want? Why does he want Boba's empire? Did he always see himself ruling an empire? Did he really hate the bounty hunting? Yeah, Jabba's empire. Thank you. Did he really hate the bounty hunting lifestyle and he wants to settle down on Tatooine and right, does find himself a permanent home? Does he want to get a couple of pets, have a couple of kids? I don't know. Maybe, maybe not. Right? Like, is there some injustice that's happening on Tatooine that he really wants to right? You know, he really hated Jabba and like he says he wants to rule with respect. Why does he care about the people of Tatooine so much? I feel like you have to give us hints of what those reasons are to help make the character feel three-dimensional and help us care about things like those little visits, right? Like, if he's going to go to the bar and chat to this woman about like the tribute and why he doesn't have a litter, which everyone is so obsessed with in this show. Like, yeah. Why aren't you? It's like, I think it's been mentioned 8 times. But it's like that would mean something to us if we understood deeply and truly who Boba Fett is or what he wants for his own life, the man he wants to be. And I would love to know the same thing about Fennec Shand.
Yes.
Deeply. Mm-hmm. Yes. I truly want to know so much about her. Why is she here? What is she doing here? Like, what does she want?
Why is she loyal to Boba? Like,
she saved his life, by the way. He saved her life, by the way, in The Mandalorian.
Yeah, we should have given you homework, Alex.
Yeah, honestly, Alex.
I'm sorry. I expect a new show to give me the necessary information right, to understand the characters.
That is not an unreasonable expectation.
No. Maybe in this world it actually is. Right.
Now I don't know that that's a true statement.
Yeah. But I just feel like, again, there's a lot of character work that I'm missing here. And if, you know, the best TV shows and the best movies do it all at once. They give us the character pieces while they're giving us like the tension within the scene itself, right? So think about the introduction of Han Solo, where he is going to sit there and tell us his ideology. He's like, I don't care about anybody but myself, kid. But like, here's my ship. It's the fastest in the galaxy. And like, the very minute we meet him, we know who he is. We know what he wants. Like, he's telling us what he believes in and what he wants from life, while we're wondering if he's going to get out of this altercation in this bar, right? So it's doing all the same things at once. And I feel like so far, Book of Boba Fett has not quite mastered that in this first couple of episodes.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I think like you're saying, there's like a theme / big picture. What is this show about question that has not been answered. And I think maybe in episode 2, as we've been saying, we start to see kind of the breadcrumbs that might lead to that, right? You know, like you're saying, the one thing that he says that is like a value statement is, I want to rule with respect, which, right, nothing that we already know about Boba Fett points us to like, oh, yes, that makes sense. But yeah, if we are learning that, oh, well, he spent a lot of time here now and has gotten to know like the people and the natives of this world that have been oppressed by the people and the machines,
yeah,
like maybe eventually by the end of the show, we'll know why he wanted stuff at the beginning.
Yeah.
But I will say, I'm curious. I am invested in the present day story just because it's dealing with you know, the Hutt underworld kind of gangster thing, which I think is a fun part of the Star Wars world. Very little has happened in that. And honestly, it just makes me want to watch Solo again, because I know I might be the lone person in the world that loves Solo and things.
I love Solo. Okay. I rewatched it recently and I love it.
It's there's two of you.
Yep.
It's a good movie, you guys. Anyway, but so I'm curious to see where it goes with that. But I think there is also this bigger thing that is a tonal thing that I'm still struggling with Star Wars things. And I think someone maybe on Twitter I saw was commenting on the need to make all the bad guys good guys. And then like Boba Fett wasn't a good guy. Like, he was an antagonist, essentially. He put Han Solo in carbonite, right? Like, so I can feel the, well, if he's going to be the protagonist of this like Star Wars show that is maybe for kids, and that's another big question or problem I think that Star Wars movies and content have now, is like, who is the audience, right? Like, is it millennial 35-year-old Michael who, like Alex was saying, I don't think about this guy when I think of Boba Fett, but people younger than us probably do because they mostly know him from the prequels, right? So I feel like there's just a lot of who is the audience for this, and tonally, how do we position everybody as fighting for the good side? And I also just don't know that Star Wars as a world has enough foundational structure to support that much in-depth world building. But we can talk about that more in future episodes and as we go along. But it's interesting because, like Alex, you were saying you were enjoying like learning about the Tusken Raiders and humanizing them. And like the two notes that I made for that episode was like, I hate that we're spending time humanizing the Tusken Raiders and learning more about them. Anyway, so yeah, I think it's a really interesting thing to continue to watch them navigate as they're reaching into these beloved properties, but also trying to create something new. And it's a difficult line to walk. And overall, I think they are doing it pretty successfully and people are responding and enjoying it. And so I'm really curious to see now that they've only done three TV shows also. Like, for some reason in my head, maybe I'm conflating them a little bit with Marvel, but I was like, yeah, they've done a bunch of these at this point. But this is only the third entry and it's the first non-Mandalorian entry. Mm-hmm. So what is this going to bring to light as far as the direction that they're heading? And, you know, maybe it'll give some clues about the Obi-Wan series and the other stuff that's coming that might play around with different genres and different tones and all that stuff.
Well, just really quick, speaking of tone, one thing that was really striking me in these two episodes is that these episodes don't seem like they're in any way interested in being funny. Like, there's not a lot of levity to them. Like, there's a couple kind of visual gags.
Fennec makes a couple, like, one-liner jokes.
Yeah, there's like, a little bit of sarcastic or just dry humor, you know, a little bit here. But not in, like, a Han Solo, like, kind of, you know, fumbling hero, lovable fumbling hero kind of way. And even The Mandalorian is, like, funny in how weird it is. In some places, and obviously, you know, Grogu, Baby Yoda.
That's Baby Yoda, Alex.
That character it creates, you know, moments of comedy, right?
Yeah.
And so, you know, Jon Favreau as a writer, comedy is one of the things he does really beautifully, and interweaves it into like action adventure stories. And I was expecting this to be a little bit funnier, and I don't know why, but it just feels like it isn't as funny. You know, it, like you're pointing out, Alex, it feels like a lot of the stuff with the Tusken Raiders is like really serious, you know, we're like struggling to survive and then we're like learning about culture, and not so much with the humor. And same thing with the present day storyline. I think I don't know, I want to like complain for a minute that Fennec Shand is not more different than Boba Fett. I feel like they're kind of similar people. And so, like, I kind of want like a screwball comedy or like a buddy cop movie where they're like really different people, right? And they're like kind of thrown together and have to work together. And I feel like that makes for really good action too, where they have different, you know, fighting styles and different approaches to doing things. And but actually, they're quite similar, it seems. And I feel like that would create more humor too if like Fennec Shand was like a little bit more outrageous and she's slightly different in personality than Boba Fett, but she's not very different. You know,
they're both
mean?
Very serious,
right? That's yeah. Like, yeah.
You also cast. I think they're trying to get the entire cast of the IT Crowd to be droids in this universe because we have
truly,
Richard
Matt
Iwate.
Barry. I know, yeah.
But Matt Barry has done nothing funny. Like,
no, I know.
He's just been there and said yeah. lines. I'm like, I recognize you as a funny person, but
yeah, not in this case.
Yeah,
yeah. And there's that little bit of a gag of like. You found the Rancor pit. Oh, no, you're scared of the Rancor. JK, he died a long
There's
time ago.
There's no Rancor
ago.
Here yet.
Here's yeah. a rat. so, yeah.
And the training the Tusken Raiders to drive the thing.
Sure,
you know, there's yeah. definitely right. been moments like that, but it hasn't been... I think it's been a fun show, but it hasn't been a sort of light comedy fun show.
Yeah, yeah. Right.
Yeah. And yeah, what is the tone of Star Wars is like a whole big...
An open question, yeah.
Huge question, and obviously it... It has to evolve. So yeah, I feel like there's plenty to talk about, both in terms of like Star Wars as a whole and also this show episode by episode. I think once we have episode 3, then we'll kind of be able to see like what is the pattern that's evolving here and what is the direction that it's pointing in. So
real quick, an interesting thing about Mandalorian season 1 was every episode felt disjointed to me for the first half of the season. And then it wasn't until episode, I don't know, 6 or something, where suddenly it was like, oh, now these characters are coming back. And now we're actually telling a cohesive story with a through line. Season 2 did that a little bit more. And Boba Fett's already doing that, but it'll be interesting to see how much of a slow burn they're doing with this series, how much stuff. There's a reason we don't know X, Y, and Z is because they are saving things for later episodes. So I think it's just very interesting to see how they choose to structure these seasons.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's one of the fun things about doing these what we're watching series is that we get to go episode by episode and look back and analyze the structure in retrospect. And as we get more of the pieces of the puzzle
and make predictions, which is always fun when you don't know what's coming. Yeah,
right.
Sometimes accurate, sometimes very inaccurate.
Yeah, it varies. but yeah, if you listener want to go on this journey and watch the show with us week by week and listen to our reactions, head over to our Patreon. Those episodes are definitely more loose, I will say, than
unfiltered.
They are frank.
Yes, we give our actual thoughts on what's happening. Not to say that we don't give our actual thoughts here, but we don't hold back, good or bad, and I feel like we do a good job of being constructive when things are working and when things aren't working. And we have a lot more fun. I spend less time trying to articulate my thoughts properly, for example, on those episodes.
Right. Yeah.
And we can swear.
I already don't do that.
And we can swear. Thank you, Alex.
Yeah. Which is important. Yeah. Yeah. So head over to Patreon, sign up for the $5 tier to get access to all the What We're Watching episodes, including our past seasons on Loki and Apple TV Foundation. Remember that, everybody?
Speaking of swearing.
But for
Speaking
now,
of frank thoughts.
For now, we will end it here, but we will see you next week as we begin our 3-part series on The Godfather, which I'm very excited about. So we will see you in the next episode, everybody.
Bye, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Bye.